third case for oral argument this morning is the Missouri River Energy Services appellant versus City of Sioux Falls appellee. For the appellant is Mark Meyer, managing attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellee is Arshon Turno from the City Attorney's Office in Sioux Falls. Justice Meyer Henry has disqualified herself for obvious reasons, and in place of Justice Meyer Henry, the court has appointed the Honorable Arthur Rush, Circuit Judge from Vermillion to sit in Justice Meyer Henry's place. Mr. Meyer Henry, you may proceed, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, I'm pleased to report. This is a case that was tried 3 days in January and February of 2001. It's an eminently main case, but an unusual. Why is it unusual? Well, it's a partial taking, first of all, not a complete taking. And the taking took place in circumstances where no final plans were presented to the jury, which is highly unusual. This case began with the resolution of necessity passed by the City of Sioux Falls declaring that this 2.9 acres out of a tract of 14 acres of Missouri Rivers was necessary for the building of a street, extension actually of Louise Avenue in Sioux Falls. This is part of what I'm told is the largest state transportation project ever built, which is the Russell Street Interchange.
And you did not challenge, my understanding, then the right of the state to take property for this Russell Street?
No, that's not what this case is about. My client did not challenge the power or authority of the City of Sioux Falls to take the property. We all know there's only three grounds to do that. We don't allege any of those grounds exist in this case. What this case is about, the two issues we've raised on appeal, is whether there was jurisdiction of the trial court to try this eminent domain case, and secondly, whether Missouri River was denied a fair trial. The second issue, in a way, dovetails with the first, because here's the issue. We all know we're a notice pleading state, generally. So pleadings in our state are seldom looked at with particularity. In other words, we start the lawsuit and we'll figure out what it's about as we go along. Eminent domain law, and this is a case that your honors or none of your predecessors have ever decided in this state, citing the jurisdiction, how jurisdiction arises in eminent domain case. So the law I'm talking about that's in the brief is from other states, but I think it's uniform and not in dispute even by the parties here today. Number one, an eminent domain petition has to be particular enough that the parties can determine the extent of the property taken, what interests in the real estate are taken. It has to be described with particularity. In this case, as set forth in the appendix, there was a drawing made or a plat of H1, and that is what is also in the judgment. Now, normally, when the state of South Dakota and most other governments do it, they draw a plat, a government lot, and that's the proposed land to be taken. But an integral part of that are the plans of the highway or the improvement. Now, that's not really necessary when the government's going to take all of the tract of land. In other words, if you're going to take all of a block owned by someone, you don't need those plans because it's a total taking. And the way you value the property, of course, is how much is the fair market value of the property. But that wasn't the case here. The parties stipulated and agreed, and in the appendix to the city brief, are after pictures, which I'm going to refer to in my argument because they can point out what happened in this case. But in this case, it was a partial taking. My client had a rectangular piece of property and the road diagonally cuts right through it. So clearly, this is a case where you have to value the property, what was its value before and what was its value after. It's a partial taking that this court has looked at many times. So anytime there's a partial taking, except in this case, there is a certified set of plans. Why? Because other cases across the country cited in our brief point that out. This case, and why we're challenging it, the judgment is res judicata. You don't get to go back in and amend mistakes in an eminent domain case, and we aren't urging that. just the opposite. So the courts have said...
Did I understand you, Mr. Meyer Henry, to indicate that some of your cases say there have to be a certified set of plans and a partial taking?
No cases say that, Judge Rush. I'm saying that's the practice in the state. When the Department of Transportation or the state has a partial taking, it's known because of the appraisers, everybody has to look at what are the plans, where's the water going to go, where are the access points going to be afterwards. That wasn't done here. In fact, the jurisdictional issue is best proven by what happened here. This turned out to be a contentious case, frankly, but it started with a pretrial. And the pretrial had this kind of discussion, which now, at least I believe we were all mistaken as to the law and the way we should proceed. But the pretrial was an attempt by the landowner to ask the city attorney who was there whether the assumptions made by the landowner's appraiser were correct, because there were no plans. Now, the appraiser got to go see some plans, but no plans were ever produced, and I'm talking about schematic, specific plans, of how this was going to be built, where there were going to be cuts, and so forth. And if I can refer to these photographs that were taken later, one of the issues at that pretrial had to do with where a sewer line was. That becomes important in valuing property, because if you have a street that runs through it, now you're going to change the direction of a sewer line. You can't build a building on top of a sewer line. That was part of what was discussed. But the other assumptions were after the construction, and if you look at A1 and B1 to the city's brief, after the construction, you will see that my client's property was cut in two, it is not in squares, there were a lot of things to go in trying to value it. So the question at the pretrial was, the assumptions made by the landowner's appraiser, were they correct? The city, frankly, refused to answer that. But in eminent domain cases, you always get the appraiser for the government. And in our brief, Appendix 13, Mr. Shackett, on behalf of the city, described the taking. Now, usually, that's not that big a deal. But in this case, it becomes jurisdictional. Because one of the things that was contested in this case as a factual matter was whether a new driveway would have to be installed. In other words, if you look at Exhibit A1 to the city's brief, you will see in the stages of construction, part of the parking lot is taken away. So one of the questions was, how is the landowner going to, or is the landowner, I should say, going to get to that parking lot? The assumption made by the landowner is that a new driveway would have to come off of Louise Avenue. In other words, they got to build a new roadway, reconfigure the parking lot. As a part of that, the whole building of the landowner would change. And there's questions about cost to cure and so forth. That was part of the discussion. Now,
Mr. Meyer Henry, didn't your client testify several times that they had always assumed that access was going to be off the service road?
Yes, but let me say why this appeal is here. That's not what the judgment says, Your Honor. Why we're here is the judgment gives no access. It gives no access to the south part or any other part.
So your position is that to be a valid judgment, it has to describe every curb cut that's going to be in that property?
Yes, absolutely, because that's, or by reference to a set of plans. That's why I'm saying, Judge Rush, you bring up where I'm going with this. When you do it with the state, you have a set of plans, so they get marked as an exhibit. They aren't paraded around to the jury. But those of us who do these cases know that's part of the case. Now you know where it's at. But more importantly, and that's jurisdiction, the other cases say you have to have a description such that the appraisers can determine what's being taken to appraise the property. If you will look at Appendix 13, and it's clear as a bell, the ringing of a bell, is the city's own appraiser assumed the same thing the landowner did, that once the plans came out that were attached to the petition, there would be no driveway.
So what we're talking about is the city's argument in negotiations. As this court knows, there's always negotiations. And yes, my client was told they would get that. But once you read what Shackett says, the city's appraiser, who should have the best knowledge of anyone, he says that they will have to install a new driveway. And listen to this, and this is why it's jurisdictional. As best the appraiser can determine, there will be a loss of approximately 11 parking places in the new right-of-way and eliminating the existing driveway. A new driveway to Louise Avenue will need to be developed. Well, that's the issue. Even their appraiser could not tell from the description and did not testify to it. At the end of the trial, and it went on, you will see at page 394, and in a way I'm kind of sad to read my own words, but I was unhappy and angry. After the trial of the first day, I attempted, frankly, and I apologize to the court, but I'm asking the city at that point, what are we trying this case about? I asked the question, but the access will not be from the east, meaning you can still get into the parking lot. From the east into the old portion of the parking lot, from the east towards the west. Mr. Torno answers, that may or may not be true. That's up to the engineer. At that point, it's jurisdictional. If you don't know what you're fighting over, and the judgment in this case, by the way, is a total taking, that's why it's jurisdictional. Neither side tried this as a total taking, meaning no access whatsoever. There's no doubt. Afterwards, we got access. But that's not what the judgment says. And as it stands today, there is no access to the southern portion. And there's a judgment in place. And if you refer back to the judgment, it shows that drawing. It shows no access points. But the second issue dovetails, because the landowner went in and tried this case with the understanding, same as their appraiser, that there would be no cut. Yes, there would be access to the property, but in a different place, requiring the building of a new driveway, requiring a new access point. What did the city do? They called an engineer who, although they didn't answer the interrogatories and ever disclosed these plans, testified that they had plans. The question was, so the city of Sioux Falls has not set a plan for this road as yet. Preliminary plans, this set in front of me was done back in 2000. Last year in 2001, a part of the plans were taken. But here's what's important, and this goes to just the fairness of the trial my client got. I asked the question, at the request of the, I asked this question, about the driveway, could it be changed? So although you might say there will be a driveway on the east side of this property as you have drawn, we won't know that until the plans are final and the decision will be made by the city. That's correct. Again, that goes back to a fundamental thing. How can you value property when, in this instance, when you don't know the extent of the taking? Both sides tried a case that does not conform to the judgment in this case, nor to the petition.
Let me ask you something about that. As I read this, it appeared to me that at the end of the day, at the end of the trial, the jury awarded its damages based on the assumption that the access was going to be provided. Would that be fair? It appears.
We can guess that, yes.
Well, based on the size of the verdict,
right,
what your assumptions were and your requests, and what they did and what the city proposed.
Right.
Well, and I understand your argument about res judicata, but what about, would Rule 60B relief be available to collaterally attack this judgment if it turns out that the city does something inconsistent with the way it was actually and finally submitted to the jury?
Justice Center, no. That would be bad law. First of all, their judgment He has an absolute defense. We can start all the lawsuits we want, but I think these cases should be over. I just got done, as this court well knows, with a 7-year case with the city. Nobody wants to try these cases over and over. What should happen is in the beginning, they should do it right. And it's not often you hear lawyers admit that they didn't, that they made a mistake, but in this case, the big mistake was made by myself and the trial judge in talking about trying an eminent domain partial taking case with assumptions. That's what plans are for. In this case, the city legal position was they didn't know whether they were going to take this property or not. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was their position. And so there was, they wanted to try this case to see what the value was. They never disclosed the plans, although they had them, so that we could do this right the first time. So no, I don't think we should go back and do that, Justice.
Well, I'm not asking if you should. I'm saying legally, could you?
Well, the other states have said no. They've said, that's why I'm urging this court to look at this as a matter of jurisdiction. That in this case, we didn't try what the judgment says. Everybody can agree to that. We didn't try a taking where there was no access allowed, because if that's what the judgment says, and the jury verdict certainly didn't pay us. They assumed we were going to get into the south portion, and I assume we will too. But that's not what the petition says, and that's not what the judgment says. What happened here is the failure, jurisdictional failure, properly described this, ran into a big brouhaha because the city changed what was going to be taken. And yes, they made my side look stupid. Because even after their appraiser spoke and testified in line with his appraisal that you can't get in the driveway here, you're going to have the driveway here, they call a fellow with plans that big around, sits in front of the jury and says, oh, well, they're going to have access. But now it's a jurisdictional issue because that's not what they had in their petition. Their petition has a drawing, and they made a decision not to disclose this. We had interrogatories asking for these plans. We never got those. So, yes, we could go 60B, but in the next case, no. Why is this the first time this came up? Because the city tried a new procedure.
I may be missing something, but is this picture B1, this appendix B1 that appears on Appley's brief, is that accurate? Is that really what the judgment provided?
No. Oh, you mean the North Louise Avenue?
Right.
Yes.
Well, but doesn't this picture show that you have access?
No, the judgment does not have anything to do with access. That's what the case is about. This shows the physical taking. We're not quarreling about that, Your Honor. And what we're quarreling about on the jurisdictional issue is in a partial taking, the petition must describe the extent of it.
I know it, but is your only complaint with the judgment that it doesn't show the property as this exhibit depicts? Or in other words, if the judgment were modified to reflect what is shown in this picture, would you have no complaints?
No, we would have a complaint, because that's the second issue that dovetails in.
What's your complaint if you do have access here?
Our complaint, maybe I'm not making myself clear, is we didn't try a case about access being here. Our side and their appraiser tried a case that the access would not be there, Justice Sagers.
I thought you tried the case with the assumption that there was going to be access. And now there is access, as I understand it. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. But look at the southern portion. There is no access, correct?
Look, there's access on the service road. There's access on North Louise all the way through. I guess you'd have to have a road cut or something.
Exactly. That's what these cases are tried over, are curb cuts.
You have approximately a minute left.
Generally...
This may be... Are you saying you can't get any curb cuts into your own property?
I'm saying the judgment says we cannot.
Doesn't say anything about it, isn't that correct?
That's right. And so, what the other cases say and what we're...
Well, shouldn't you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but shouldn't you have moved the trial court then to have the judgment reflect that based on what you tried by the consent of the parties, that there should be, that some access will be provided which isn't disclosed right now?
Well, I suppose if you want to correct the errors of the city, you could do that. But what I'm urging this court to do is to require the government, when they take your property, that they describe the extent of the taking and you don't get ambushed during the trial. And lastly, I'm saying that this judgment says that my client has been paid for all damages. And if the city does not want to open up a curb cut, they have res judicata behind them, and that a judgment should be in conformity with the petition. And in this case, the evidence that my client was paid on was that there would be some access. Not quarreling about that. Where it was at is in dispute. But that isn't what the judgment says, and that isn't what the petition asked for.
And the time has expired. Turner, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. On behalf of the City of Sioux Falls, I am Sean Turner, and I tried this case back in January of 2002 on behalf of the City of Sioux Falls. And I would represent to this court that this is truly a unique appeal in that it is primarily based on irrelevant innuendo. And it starts with, as Chief Justice Gilbertson alluded to, back in December of 2000, when the city filed this petition, as is required by SDCL 2135-2, it sufficiently described the property. In fact, under 2135-2, the requirement is that the petition shall contain a description of the property to be taken or damaged. With that petition, the city, as it's always done in its condemnation cases, as does the state, I've done about a half dozen of these cases, as we always do, we filed a plat of H1 showing the property to be taken or damaged. In fact, it's represented to you in our brief in appendix both A and B.
You say you filed it with the clerk but not with the Register of Deeds?
We did not file the plat, no, Your Honor, because at that time, as this court knows, when the city does a non-quick take condemnation, as you set out in Johnson, articulately set out the standards for those, in a non-quick take condemnation, of course, at the time of filing the petition in 2000, the city did not own the property. The city, therefore, had no authority to file its plat. But it did actually file the plat, serve that on landowners, and at that time, there was no objection to the plat. And in fact, that lack of objection carried through to the time of trial when, as this court knows, defendants had the burden of proof to set out the value of compensation that they sought for losing this 2.9 acres out of 14 acres of their property. Defendants actually admitted that exhibit into evidence. It's truly unique to me in that this court obviously has held many, many times that to preserve the record for appeal, to object to an exhibit, to object to evidence that came in that was considered by the jury, that of course defendants in this case would have to properly object. Here, not only did they not object, they introduced it and represented that as the area of the taking. And in fact, I would represent that plat, which is appendix 9 of their brief, so accurately depicts the property that you can match it up with what actually happened as the city took the property.
Does it not show the curb cuts?
It absolutely does not show curb cuts, because curb cuts, of course, are not required to be shown on a plat. And what's required of a plat is laid out in SDCL 11.3.1.1 sub 5. And this court in Millard actually said, what is a plat, what is not a plat? And clearly, this was a certified plat by a registered land surveyor, and nowhere in South Dakota law is it required for a land surveyor to lay out access points? And if you think about that, that only makes common sense, because if a registered land surveyor, when laying out a plat, was required to designate access points, which can change, obviously, that would mean that every time a new access point was granted by the city, a new plat would have to be filed to vacate the old plat. Well, that simply doesn't make sense.
Doesn't that make sense? Important to the landowner whether he's going to get access or not? Apparently, that's kind of untrue to us.
Right, and what the city represented at trial and is understood by Merlin Sawyer, who testified on their behalf, they understood that they were going to have access, and in fact, as the project was completed, they did have access, the exact same access that they had prior to the taking. And in fact, the city would point out that, as we noted in our brief, this whole issue of why I say that this is based on irrelevant innuendo is based on the fact that in the Darnell case, this court said access is not compensable or non-compensable. Access is not conferred by a judgment, as alluded to by Judge Rush. Access is determined, it is an interesting analogy back to the previous case when you talk about what's set out by the South Dakota legislature as compared to what's set out by administrative rule. Access is not conferred by a court judgment. Access is conferred by the city of Sioux Falls and its engineering departments working with Public Works. And in fact, that very access, how it's determined and how that transpires, is actually laid out by Dr. Lyle Johnson, who is the director of Public Works for the city of Sioux Falls, in the post-trial hearing held, I believe, on April 4th, 2002, where he indicated to the court, as the court had some questions in this regard, that look, we didn't have, as alluded to by opposing counsel, this idea that we didn't have final plans, we wouldn't share final plans. The reason there weren't final plans is because we didn't know if we were going to acquire the property. As Dr. Johnson laid out it, post-trial then, once the taking is something that the city has acquired and the city knows what it's going to do with this project, then it will work with the landowner to determine where the access points are based upon site plans and based upon required engineering standards. So it's a little bit... So
are these access points or curb cuts, are their location controlled by city ordinance?
They are.
Is that city ordinance part of our record here?
It is not. They're controlled actually by city engineers' design standards. And as you'll see here, there were no changes to that because the curb cuts were allowed to remain. And in fact,
Mr. Tignall, I don't understand why you could not commit at a pretrial or at the other times where the landowner's counsel attempted to get this straightened out, why you waited until they rested their case to finally concede and finally put on evidence that there was going to be access, which totally was at odds with what they had been led to believe to that point.
And again, I would go back to...
Why couldn't you have made that concession until after they rested their case?
Because as is represented in the record, there were actually six different plans that the city had presented to work with the landowner about where the best access point would be, depending on how they wanted to design this small visitor parking lot.
Well, how did that miraculously appear out of the six choices only after the defendant rested?
What we asserted is the first option that was presented was actually the access point that was going to leave that would leave their visitor parking lot the most intact.
Why didn't you tell them that at the pretrial, or why didn't you tell them that before they started putting their evidence on? Or why didn't you disclose that when your appraiser testified?
Our appraiser testified he wasn't sure where the access was going to be, but one additional access point. That's the difference in what Mr. Meyer-Henry refers to is, specifically talks about Appendix 13 of their brief. I do want to address that briefly, in that, again, there's a good example. I think you'll see in footnote 7 of our brief, that's wholly improper to bring up before this court because that exhibit actually was offered or intended to be offered by the city, was objected to by Missouri River and their counsel, and that objection was sustained. It's not part of the record.
But so I still need to know why, of the six alternatives, that you would only commit to the one that the jury ultimately apparently decided upon.
And we actually committed to that
after the defendant is arrested.
No, we committed to that before that. We committed, when Mr. Meyer-Henry talks about this, at the end of the first day of trial, and it was before that, that we had talked to Merlin Sawyer and Missouri River about this, that in that long discussion that's in the transcript, I believe it was Jeff DeLory said, the plan is, assuming we acquire the property, to put the access back the way it was and to expand the visitor parking lot 65 feet. The key part of Mark Wiederich's testimony, and that's what you're referring to, and that's what opposing counsel has referred to as somehow ambushing them, was to simply say that all of the different options that were presented and which Missouri River knew, none of those required a change of access. If you look at what were produced, numbers 1 through 6, those different options, all of them had the same access point, again, on this small visitor parking lot. One of the things I wanted to address as far as the idea that the plat doesn't show access points.
Mr. Turner, let me ask, in Judge Titi's memorandum opinion that he issued on this issue, he references that, in fact, the option 1 was included as page 55 in Mr. Davenport's appraisal. Is that the one that was ultimately developed?
Very good point. It was, and that was him, Dean Davenport's appraisal report, and it's included again as an appendix in our brief, I believe it's appendix E, that for Missouri River to claim that they didn't know, that they had no knowledge, is disingenuous in that their own appraiser said it appears that the access will remain intact and there may be an additional access to Louise Avenue. He said that in his appraisal report. Now, granted, some of his testimony was conflicting, but that's really the heart of the issue. That's where Missouri River lost this case, because their witnesses weren't credible, whether it was Dean Davenport and his conflicting and confusing appraisal report that wasn't supported, or whether it was Merlin Sawyer in his testimony. And I think it's important to point out that his initial testimony for the value of this property was $1.4 million as compared to the city's $306,000. And so when the jury comes back at $316,000, that doesn't have anything to do with access. That has to do with the fact that the jury believed the city's witnesses, and specifically Steve Shackett in his appraisal, when he talked about that the before and after value was not nearly as dramatic as presented by Missouri River and their witnesses.
Does that property usually run about $100,000 an acre?
I don't believe it's that high. I believe
it was here, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
2.96 acres and $300,000, $310,000.
Right, and one of the reasons for that is, of course, as the court knows, the appraiser is to view that property in its highest and best use, and as is done in typical condemnations for the city, that appraiser gives the landowner the benefit of the doubt. This isn't the short end of the stick when he says $306,000. It is the benefit of the doubt as you look at the highest and best use of the property. But again, what the city was required to do within its petition and within this plat is to simply inform them of the property to be acquired. As Judge Rush alluded to, however, nowhere is it in South Dakota law that, and I quote an opposing counsel, that it is an integral part of the description to have the plans of the street project included. You know, as much as Missouri River, as an adjacent property owner, might want to be a project manager or to be in there rubbing elbows, if you will, with the city engineer's office, they're not. And that's the purpose of a condemnation. When we acquire the property, the city develops the project, lays out the plans by showing the plat, that property that they're going to take, but they don't show every access point, nor are they required to. And in fact, one of the things, if you took their argument to its logical extreme, of course, they would say that access has been cut off within this judgment to their large employee parking lot to the west, because it doesn't show curb cuts back there either. Well, of course it doesn't show curb cuts back there, because plats don't show curb cuts. As to the issue of...
The curb cuts are shown on the photograph.
Certainly, that's because they were left intact. When you look at, again, it's Appendix 9 of their brief, the actual plat of H1, they don't show those same curb cuts on the west side.
Did the access to that employee parking lot have anything to do with this suit at all?
No, they did not make a claim, but I'm saying to take their argument to its logical extreme that the judgment doesn't show, again, what we're talking about is little hash marks or reference any hash marks to access on the east side. Well, neither does it reference any hash marks or access points on the west side. And of course, the visitor parking lot, of course, that's what we think is unique about this as well, that we're talking about a visitor parking lot that they made much to do about at the trial. It was 12 spaces. The visitor parking lot, I believe, is about 100 spaces. And their claim was, if they lost access to these 12 spaces, which of course they didn't lose access to, that it was going to cost them $1.4 million in part to redo their building and to do various other things. And again, the jury just didn't believe that and came back with a reasonable number of $316,000 as just compensation. Mr. Meyerhenry alluded to the fact that dovetailing into this issue of a sufficient description of the property is the fact that they claim that they were denied a fair trial. The city initially points out that that would typically be an abuse of discretion standard, and of course, Judge Teedy denied that motion for new trial. However, as alluded to, both within our brief and before Judge Teedy, we don't think the city asserts that you don't even get to that abuse of discretion standard because, of course, Missouri River here alleged surprise. They alleged under SDCL 15659A, surprise and newly discovered evidence. And under 15659A, those are subs 3 and 4. And of course, that statute requires, and this is not a city requirement, something that we require, it's required by state law, that any such motion must be made upon affidavits attached to and made a part of the record. Those affidavits are nowhere within this record. Therefore, by failing to file those affidavits, again, I think those type of affidavits are much more than, say, a demonstrative aid. Those are something that are required by statute. And having failed to do so, under this court's clear precedent, they failed to preserve this issue for appeal. However, if you do look at the issue substantively, given that they failed to file those affidavits, Judge Teedy clearly made a ruling that not only was there not surprise, but he directly referenced Dean Davenport's, both his testimony at deposition, which is a part of the record, and also his testimony at trial in conjunction with his appraisal report. And that appraisal report, by the way, is different than Steve Shackett's appraisal report because Dean Davenport's appraisal report is in the record. Again, the city would point out that when opposing counsel is here talking about what Steve Shackett said in his appraisal report, that's not even in the record. Therefore, that issue shouldn't be before the court. However, within his testimony, I would say that Steve Shackett did say he wasn't sure where the access points would be, but he would assume that there was going to be a new access point on Louise Avenue. Again, that's something we don't know because that's down the road. And also, when you look at Dean Davenport's testimony, again, as to this issue about surprise or whether it was newly discovered evidence, you only need to look at opposing counsel's offer of proof at the close of trial. When Dean Davenport said, yes, he had been presented information showing that there was going to be access on the east side, but he thought, and I quote, and this is it, in volume 3 of the transcript at page 86, he said he thought access was, quote, up in the air. And that, therefore, quote, he had to assume that there wouldn't be the same access, end quote. Well, you know, I won't delve into what happens when you make assumptions that aren't correct. And really, that's their issue. I know they like to bring up this pretrial proceeding where the city wouldn't agree and stipulate to their appraisal report. And as the city mentioned in its brief, I can't envision a time that if we're going to be going to trial, and the valuations are as they are here, their appraiser's at $700,000, our appraiser is at $306,000, that the city would stipulate and agree and say, we agree with all their assumptions in their appraisal report. That's where they need to do their job. And that's where they need to present the information through their witness, subject to cross-examination. And obviously here, the city did cross-examine Dean Davenport as an appraiser. And we believe, and the record will bear out, that we shot many holes in his appraisal report. Therefore, we weren't willing to stipulate and agree. And also, the irrelevant innuendo or disingenuous distraction within this whole argument about what the city agreed to or was it being coy at the pretrial proceeding, The city points out in its brief the entire substance of what that motion was all about. That is Missouri River's motion about whether, thank you, whether the city would stipulate to their appraisal report. And the entire issue, to use the council's words at that hearing, the primary reason for that motion was Missouri River wanted to know if the city was going to move the sewer easement that at present, prior to the building of the road, prohibited Missouri River from expanding their office building. And the city said, if we acquire the property, we will move the sewer easement. But we're not going to agree that if we don't acquire the property, we've somehow made an admission that we won't do that.
Okay, well then what is a landowner going to do in a situation like this where they end up with an unqualified judgment of a taking? And now all of a sudden, a year or 2 years later, the city decides to do something totally different with the access to this property that cost the landowner a substantial amount of money to rectify. What relief would they be entitled to? My assumption is the city's going to be on a high horse arguing res judicata.
The city, first of all, that would be a hypothetical that this is somehow an unqualified judgment, because the city asserts based upon the plat, based upon what is required in the statute, this is not an unqualified judgment. However, in a case where there was some mistake in the judgment, I think you alluded to it, in that situation, that could be attacked under 60B. But that is not the case here, and nor will the city concede that access points are required to be referenced, alluded to, pointed to, directed at within any judgment. So with that, the city would ask this court to affirm Judge Teedy's denial of the motion for new trial, and as is consistent with many years of eminent domain law in South Dakota, affirm the trial court that the trial court, of course, did have subject matter jurisdiction, thereby affirming the verdict and judgment for the city of Sioux Falls. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Meyerhander, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court. This whole argument, I think, points out the jurisdictional defect. Having lawyers, appraisers, and people in an eminent domain case arguing about what's the taking is the purpose of the petition. And that's why I urge you so strongly, just as this court has reversed cases with less things at risk, I remind you to the Hendrickson case where one sentence about access reversed a 6-7, I don't remember, pretty good sized judgment. This case was not tried by the parties on the same page. For whatever the city of Sioux Falls is saying, the landowner, yes, was embarrassed, and I agree with Mr. Torno. Our witnesses looked bad because he was able to call in an engineer and basically ambush us by saying, your assumption that you aren't going to have access there is all wrong. And he buttresses the city buttresses that today by negotiation discussions. Yes, they talked about all kinds of things. But we shouldn't be at a pretrial hearing wondering where a sewer line is going to go. This was a partial taking. I can't accentuate that more. A total taking, all these issues go away. Taking the whole thing, what's the property worth? Any access issues?
Mr. Meyerhander, is it your position then that they would have to describe not only the curb cuts, but the elevations and the drainages and every possible one of those things would have to be described in the judgment?
It's done all the time. Every time we have a case with the State Highway Department, you get the plans. That's the first thing Carl Quist, now Darren Bergquist, he files the petition, usually it refers to plans. You get the plans, and the appraisers take them. You hire an engineer, say, where's the water going to be and everything. Well, this was this unusual one. Kind of tried because of some dicta of this court that they didn't want to take it right away because then they'd have to pay some interest pending the trial. So here the city said, we don't know if we're going to take it or not. I don't know what they would have done had they not taken it. But I want to follow up on something Judge Zinner said, because you know the landowner gets a fair trial just like the government. Just like the government. The landowner should get a fair trial. And my client didn't get a fair trial here. I asked an interrogatory in June, well before the trial. Here's what it says.
set forth what access will be allowed to the property of the defendant after the construction is complete, including a description of curb cuts, medians, and traffic patterns. If you will look at Appendix 12 to our brief, Exhibit 23, you'll see what we get. And if you look at that, you'll see there is no access point that you now see that Justice Sabers pointed out on as-built Exhibit B.
What was Judge Keady's ruling in respect to that objection?
He overruled. I mean, you know, this was Judge Keady's first trial, and it was a heck of an experience for him. I mean, here we have a case, a sleepy eminent domain case, and there's an explosion over, you're not trying the same case. You've got experts, you've got people. We hired Spitznagels, who looked at the plans and helped us draft where the road should go. Then they refused to testify because they were afraid of repercussions from the city. That's all in the record. So it isn't just like somebody made up this problem. You try cases on credibility. Your honors have tried cases. And when your credibility is destroyed, when a simple answer at pretrial, a simple answer to the interrogatory, when those plans were in existence, you see, what's important here is the engineer brought plans that were in existence since 2000. I mean, this big around. And this is what we got in answer to our interrogatories? Yes, there were discussions. And they somehow want to say, we talked to the landowner. Well, every eminent domain case the landowners talk to, and either the city or the state or whoever, says, look, we'll give you a driveway here if and do this for you if you'll sell us the property for X. We have a statute that says you can't bring that up. And then when you get your answer to your interrogatory shows no access, and you get their appraiser who made the same assumption, what is a landowner and landowner's counsel supposed to assume? And then when the city is coy and won't answer a simple question, is there going to be a curb cut there or not? And even after the first day of trial says maybe, maybe not. Curb cuts are big deals in these eminent domain cases. You take a piece of property that only has one curb cut versus two in Sioux Falls on a commercial street, you've just halved the value of the property. We try cases over these curb cuts.
Let me go back for just a second. I understood from the city's brief that you never raised the issue of the fact that the interrogatories had not been answered. Now, you've just indicated that Judge Keady overruled your objection to that. I'm just trying to, which of those is the correct situation?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question, but I didn't follow.
The city is saying that you never raised an objection to the fact that this interrogatory was not answered. I thought you had indicated...
I try my cases on good faith. That's correct.
Judge Keady overruled your objections to that.
He did. I try these cases on good faith that we're going to be told what's going to happen. I don't expect that the information provided is then going to be pulled out from under you with some engineers that have plans that are 2 years old or something, would say no. I mean, we aren't supposed to try these cases. We aren't supposed to be sharp when we try these cases. And that's what happened here. And why should it be a jurisdictional issue? Because all we should require the government to do is what are you taking so that we can value the extent of it. Here, issue two dovetails. Had issue one been done, I wouldn't be here. My client wouldn't have been here. We would have gotten our fair trial. Time would have gone on. But we're here because we were led to believe that this parking lot cut was not going to be there. And when we inquired, we weren't told to the contrary. And when we rested, we weren't told to the contrary until Mr. Weirich came in and said, well, not only is Missouri River wrong, but even Mr. Shackett is wrong. And jurisdictionally, this is what the other states say, jurisdictionally, if the appraisers can't tell what was taken, then constitutionally that's a defect. A condemnation trial is only about one thing, money. And you both have to value the same things. And so what would have been so difficult about giving the plans? Because this is a problem for the city. The law in every other state is that the burden is on the city. The burden's on the city to describe with particularity the taking.
This isn't somehow that the landowner under the Constitution has to ferret out what the government's taking. This was a 3-day trial. We can retry this case. We've retried many eminent domain cases when we both knew what we were trying. In this case, the parties didn't try the same case. The appraisers didn't appraise what the judgment says, and I keep going back to that. This judgment is preclusive of all of our arguments. It's preclusive if the city changes its mind and the city goes on and on. We have a piece of property. Now two pieces of property that are vacant are up for sale. A wise real estate lawyer would go and look at these judgments, and these judgments, because there's no plans attached, as in most cases, the access is up to the city. Well, this court knows and everybody knows, if you don't get access to your property, you have a claim, right? The government has to give you access to your property, except here they've got a judgment that says, no, we've paid for all that. And that's why we need a retrial, so we all try the same case, so that my client can have a fair trial. Good faith demands that. We shouldn't try these eminent domain cases in the dark, especially when you had the plans available and they were requested. We urge you to reverse this case, give my client a fair trial. If the verdict's the same, so be it. That's not what this case is about. It's about being informed by the government the extent of the fake. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Henry. Court will be in recess until 9 o'clock in the morning.